example, is that abduction or not? But, you know, I think that for the most part, that's not what this is talking about, so.
That was for our group, too. We just wanted to make sure it was clear what abduction really was, instead of, like, just discharging someone to the wrong person, potentially, because it is the criminal aspect. But overall, we felt like it was fine in terms of relevance to our setting.
This is Michael. For parallelism, do we want to define this the way we did about infants? You know, discharge of someone that's not authorized, somebody that's not authorized, something like that. Because with the infants, we didn't use the term abduction.
Look, because I don't remember what.
Yeah, here it is. It's under A, under some patient protection. Infant discharge to the wrong person. You know, it's strange that we don't call this a crime. And then we have under criminal events abduction. It seems to me like these are the same thing.
You know, this is Stan. I guess I don't think of it as the same thing. I think that the abduction thing is actually the code pink that most hospitals have, where somebody walks in, grabs a baby, and heads down the back stairs. Maybe I'm just all wet, but...
No, I think that's true, and I think discharge implies that there was an actual discharge process, but the infant went to the wrong person, as opposed to an abduction, where there wasn't an actual discharge of the patient.
Okay, I get it. So then, in a way, you've defined abduction by saying that this doesn't include a hospital process in which the custodian was simply misidentified.
That's correct.
I guess I'd leave it.
Do we have consensus on this, leaving it as is, abduction of a patient of any age?
Yes.
Fine with me.
Fine with me.
Okay. Sounds good. Let's move on to C. All right. Sexual assault on a patient within or on the grounds of a healthcare facility.
From the ambulatory tap, we were fine with this, and sort of a similar comment from our last call about maybe changing the word facility. I can't remember actually where we came down on that last time, but that's the same comment again.
And this is Stan. From our side, we would agree with that, too.
The term we were debating was setting, and I think I was in favor of it.
Yeah, this is Chris. I was not able to be on the last call, so I didn't hear all that discussion, but I'm comfortable with the word setting.
Does anybody oppose changing facility to setting?
Well, we can't say on the grounds of a setting, really. Is that English?
No.
So, let's see.
Within a healthcare setting?
Or on the grounds of a healthcare facility. That would satisfy Michael.
The issue that will create for you is that there are the use of the term healthcare facility or healthcare setting, which needs to be defined. If there's a way to make it consistent, it would be a good thing.
Yeah, I think on the ground raises some of those same issues we just talked about, too. Is it on the grounds of, or is it you're under the care of someone at a facility?
Yeah, great point.
I'd be happy to change this to under care and struggle with that, with this one too.
So then could you read what that would say then? Sexual assault on a patient while under the care?
Under care in a healthcare setting.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we could toss the rest.
Right. That seems reasonable to me.
Any objections to that?
No.
Okay, we'll leave it as it is with the modifications suggested about under care and healthcare setting. Okay, moving to D, death or significant injury of a patient or staff member resulting from a physical assault, i.e. battery, that occurs within or on the grounds of a healthcare facility. What do the TAPs think?
Obviously, the we think that's important, so.
Same from us.
Question, this is the only event where we've ever had injury to a staff member. Are we concerned at all about consistency there?
I was hoping we would revisit that issue when it came to electrocution and the other ones as well.
Yeah. And I guess my only other comment is the intent issue that I mentioned earlier. We have absolutely had cases where there was a serious injury to a staff member as a result of a patient who did not have the intent to harm, a TBI patient, a patient with dementia, someone who was kind of lashing out without an intent to injure, but a serious injury resulted. And it has raised a lot of questions about whether that's the type of event that this category is meant to capture.
Michael's vote is that there are a number of facilities that deal with insane or delirious people. Or even demented. And the question here for me is, does safety only extend to the patients, and is the staff on its own regarding the provisions the institution makes for safety? And I guess my bias here is that the staff should be included if it's a safe environment, because it's hard to separate who gets injured if everybody is on the ground wrestling.
And I would, this is Sally, I would certainly wearing my union hat, would definitely want to make sure that staff member is included in this definition.
This is Tina. I would agree, too. Although I'm really concerned about the intent issue, like Diane is, I think that there are going to be lots more of these TBIs that are going to be out there now, more than we've seen with just, you know, in psych wards and in the elderly demented. So this may become a rising problem.
Well, Stan, I think you're clearly right about the incidence of TBI and that, I mean, trending upward. It is going to be something that people are going to be looking at across settings. But I don't think the intent is more relevant in a criminal setting, certainly, in terms of pressing a charge of assault. But I don't think we should worry about it so much in reporting.
Okay.
Because reporting, we just want to keep the people in the facility safe. And, I don't think you can just tell people who work in a facility, that goes with the job. You're going
right.
to get a lot of black eyes.
I agree.
You know, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
Michael agrees. I don't think intent is relevant at all. My wife works in prison, and there is an enormous ongoing training and surveillance effort about trying to keep the healthcare practitioners safe from getting, shanked. And that's simply something the facility has to learn to manage.
I think then I agree with that. I think then the issue becomes one of should it be categorized in a criminal category? And that's where we've gotten pushback from our facilities here, not necessarily that they shouldn't report an event where a staff person was seriously injured, but when you have a public reporting system that reports by facility and it's labeled as criminal and we can't release any information about the event, there's a pretty strong implication that something criminal has happened in that facility when that may not be the case.
Great point.
Yep.
I think that to that extent, I think intent is relevant, but I don't know that I have an answer for how we deal with that here. Unless you have a separate category that is not assault, but it gets at accidental injury of staff members or patients. And I don't know that we want to go down that road.
Well, what if we didn't beg the question and changed the title from criminal events to behavioral events?
Oh, I like that.
So aren't they, many of these are behavioral events,
well,
depending on how you define behavioral. I like where you're going with it. But
you're right, potentially criminal events. You know, I think maybe the problem that Diane was talking about is the title here. It's not the event. It's the categorization as criminal before even any investigation. And I think that does beg the question.
Yeah, you're right. It's the label more than the event itself.
Well, these four incidents that we're looking at today, events, I suppose they would all fall under the category of behavioral, if that's the umbrella, if that's something.
I think potentially criminal makes more clarity over behavioral.
I kind of liked potential criminal or possible criminal or something like that, because then you don't get into the issue of, you know, does the person actually go to trial or whatever it is or get charged? But, you know, sort of, I think the word criminal does help clarify what kinds of events we're thinking about.
And if we say potential, all of these, you know, they may have a defense. Any of these could go to a trial and end up with an acquittal. So maybe that's the answer.
So people are comfortable with potential criminal, whereas not criminal event?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. We'll recommend to change the heading of these all to potential criminal events and leave the physical assault definition as is, or event as is.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we plowed through criminal events or potential criminal events. Good job. I guess we should go back now to care management events and pick up where we left off there, which was E, I believe, death or serious disability associated with failure to identify and treat hyperbilirubinemia in neonates.
Well, from the ambulatory group, the group felt it was definitely relevant, but one issue was, what is a serious disability in this case? Because that might not present itself for a long time. And then the other issue was, what about the patient or the infant that gets discharged, but the hospital fine, but never goes to the follow-up appointment with the pediatrician, so there's never sort of the opportunity to diagnose this. So we wanted to kind of have something about, you know, this gets back to who are under the care, that kind of issue of, you know, who are seen in the healthcare environment, because there could be cases where they leave, they're fine, they don't go to their follow-up appointment, and then they end up having problems later.
This is Michael. I want to be very perverse on this and say we should throw this out. And it's for two reasons. One is, this is one of 10 million failures to follow up on a lab test. And we're going to propose as a new SRE failure to follow up on something phrased somehow. The other reason is because of what just mentioned. The injury in this case is extremely hard to diagnose early, you know, unless it's catastrophic. They rarely die of hyperbilirubinemia, but they can end up getting brain injury discovered at age 3. So this makes this particular one, I think, something that's better classified under a failure to track and follow.
I think that's a good recommendation.
I do too.
I do, too. I this one has bothered me for a long time. Thank you for that.
Anybody not agree with the dropping it?
This is Peter Angu. Just for context, it's not my own personal opinion, but this particular topic area has been a successful advocacy approach for many years now and has been successfully placed in a variety of venues. And while I'm not opposed to us removing it, its removal will generate some discussion and a fair amount of angst in certain circles.
This is Michael, but I'm mindful of what you're saying. We could use Kernicterus as an illustrative example under the category of missed follow-up that I'm contemplating.
And that might be a good compromise. You know, the tendency when you build these kinds of lists is there's always a fear to take something off a list. And the reality is this topic has been profiled well. It's generated great debate and discussion in many circles, continues to do so. I think finding an alternate area for it to sit without totally deleting it is a good approach.
This is Chris Goschel, and I am mindful as well of everything that is being said right now, and I also think the approach that you suggest of using Kernicterus as an example is not only a really good compromise, but moves us in the right direction of not creating or going after the million lists, but really trying to categorize.
I agree with that, too.
So, Peter, would you restate what the your compromise is for leaving it again?
Oh, actually, it's Michael.
Michael, sorry, Michael.
I guess what I would do is to put this into limbo, delete it from this list, and then when we take up the question of whether there is another new event that has something to do with missed follow-up, and I have language for that in a minute, that we then resurrect this example underneath the new event, of which it actually is merely a type.
Yeah.
And that meets with everyone's approval to delete it from this list, but take it up under new?
Yes.
Agreed.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. That's what we'll do. Moving to G now. Patient death or serious disability due to spinal manipulative therapy, right? The TAPS have opinions on spinal therapy?
This is Stan. We thought it was not particularly relevant to the outpatient surgery arena.
We said it was relevant to our setting, but felt like there needed to be some other experts called in to really help understand where this is even being used, because we didn't feel very comfortable in our knowledge of that. That being said, there was definitely not a strong push to say we absolutely want to keep it either. So I see that some folks have recommended removing it. I don't think that would have caused any objection with our group.
And it's Peter, again, Eric is not on the call anymore, but the SNF group felt it was not applicable in their setting, and I believe in thought it would be reasonable to remove it from the list.
This is Michael. If this is addressing chiropractic, there are sometimes the orthopedists do things to spines when there are serious injuries, but this, I believe, I have the impression this is addressing chiropractic. There are very few hospitals in which chiropractors are coming in and doing or have privileges there for what they do. It does happen, you know, but the actual event of a serious injury during that in a hospital setting is extremely rare. There are some broken necks and spine injuries that happen in chiropractors' offices, and it seems to me as though that's really the only place where this would really be very reportable. And if that's the case, then I'm not really sure how enthusiastic I am about it.
So this is Chris Goschel. I hear you, and I was a little confused by this, but when I looked at it and thought about chiropractic, I also thought about our osteopathic facilities where, again, spinal manipulative therapy-ish can and often does happen. The other thing that I wondered, and I clearly, I don't have a bias toward this, is that I have seen a number of facilities in our area that are beginning to hire massage therapists. And although spinal manipulative therapy is not something that I would necessarily in a therapeutic sense attribute to massage therapy, I also have read some horror stories about massage therapists doing things that they didn't intend to do with tragic results. So I'm kind of like you. Unless I was more clear about what we really mean by spinal manipulative therapy and who we're talking to, I'm not sure about this.
Yeah, it's Peter. Greg, unfortunately, is not on the call anymore. He's the only one in our group that actually has the historic perspective on this one, and he provided a little bit of it on one of our earlier calls. But as I understand it, the genesis for this being on the list was a solicitation from the American Medical Association, and it was targeted towards the chiropractic community. It may have served its purpose, and it might be another candidate for removal. If this committee feels it still is relevant and needs to be there to continue as a flag for the potential of this problem, then that's the committee's choice, too.
How different is this from hospital-acquired injury with significant disability?
Not really.
It's equivalent.
Kind of an example.
But we don't have, you know, any. We don't have a category of any iatrogenic injury. And I think that's one of the things that bothers me about this. You know, I'm all for harassing people of different specialties. But there are so many iatrogenic injuries. Why doesn't the AMA say anybody who, tears a coronary artery in the course of doing an angiogram, angioplasty? This is a known and recognized complication of a known and recognized maneuver. But this is the only one on our list like this.
Well, this is Allie. I have a question for you guys. My assumption was that this was targeting the chiropractic community, but would this not also apply to PT in some cases? I mean, you know, depending on what, you know, if you've got back and neck stuff going on, there can be some, you know, fairly significant adjustment going on there.
Yes, many of the PT guys in our hospital have taken Ceriax's course or have worked with the osteopathic community, and there are some very bona fide maneuvers that cross over a lot of specialties here. And yes, it is very, it's possible that someone's going to yank on the wrong person, give them a stroke or something.
This is Diane. I mean, I agree with what Michael's saying. It's just, this one has always just felt to me like it's targeted at, not only is it targeted at one type of provider and not others, but it just feels like this is more of a peer review issue. You're talking about individual provider technique or performance rather than a system issue. And it's always felt really qualitatively different to me than the others.
I agree completely.
Well said. I agree.
And I don't think it's going to matter too much one way or the other if it's in there. I mean, we've never had one of these reported in 7 years, so it's not an issue of burden. It just doesn't feel like it fits.
I vote to drop.
Me too.
I agree.
Okay, sounds like we have consensus on dropping that one. Is that right? It's not that rare. We reach consensus. Usually it takes us a while to get there.
That's true. It was a quick consensus, a rare quick consensus.
Well, okay, maybe that's true. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to drop that, and we'll move on to the movie of the week category, artificial insemination with the wrong donor sperm or wrong egg. What do the taps think about that one?
We thought this was relevant, at least in the ambulatory setting, ambulatory surgery setting. So, but this is a really horrible way to think about it, but it's almost like the ophthalmologist lining up all the lenses for the day. You know, it's one of those things that should be completely preventable.
Yep.
This is Michael. I'm in favor of leaving this exactly as it is, and the only comment I have on it is the reporting threshold is any. Many times, this event does not create pregnancy, and I would say it doesn't create any harm. But because it speaks to such an important process gap, I guess I would leave it in with the threshold of any instance.
I agree with Michael.
I agree as well. I would leave it in. The only question I have is, you know, this started me thinking about, you know, the Duke case of the wrong organ or something like that. That was obviously an incompatible organ as opposed to a wrong organ. But, you know, is this a category that needs to get broadened in some way, or do we just want to keep it with IVF and IVF alone?
This is Diane. I think you could actually make the argument. I'm not going to make the argument, but I think that one could, that this is a wrong procedure event because you intended to do an artificial insemination with, you know, egg A, and instead you did it with egg B, which to me would be very similar to the wrong implant issue. So it could conceivably be categorized as a wrong procedure, but I would leave it as is because I think in many cases, when people think about surgery and invasive procedures, I don't know that artificial insemination would necessarily jump to mind unless it's pulled out as a separate event. So, but I do think there are a lot of parallels with the wrong implant case.
And I'm fine with leaving it separate.
It would. This is Sally. It would confuse me if it was listed as a wrong procedure.
Yeah.
I think it would confuse a lot of people.
Yeah. Okay. Do we any objection to leaving as is? Sounds like we've got some consensus there. Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Okay. We can move on to environmental events. A, patient death or serious disability associated with an electric shock while being cared for in a healthcare facility.
Healthcare
so
setting.
From the TAP side, we were fine with this and felt it was relevant to, again, our setting, we were fine with it.
This is Stan. The surgical TAP was fine with it as well.
Is this not one where we wanted to include staff?
We had discussed that. Doran, are you on? I think you had some, didn't you have,
well,
back,
was,
way
yeah,
back,
that was my
didn't
comment.
You have some?
It was a thought that that seems pretty important to me, you know, to know if we have processes that place our staff at risk. I don't have any examples from my health system, but I think we would want to know that.
So I guess the only one that comes up for staff for me would be during resuscitation and defibrillation.
Right.
If somebody was holding on to the wrong thing.
Which really it may not be a systems issue, if you will, but can be a training issue for the system to ensure that staff know appropriate procedures around code events.
Right.
This is Michael. I think I'm very much in favor of including staff, and I also think I wasn't thinking so much of CPR as the many, many devices we have that plug stuff in around the hospital. And if one of them hurts somebody, I think that would be a very serious and majorly reportable event.
Are people okay with leaving as disability, or was there any intent to change this to injury as we have in other categories?
I think we should change it to injury, actually. And I agree with including staff.
I agree with including staff, but aren't we changing it to injury across the board?
Oh, that's right.
Are we? I'm asking the question, I guess. I'm assuming that we were.
That's my understanding.
Okay. Good. Good.
And do we need to look at all at the implementation guide in the sense of the event is intended to capture death or disability associated with unintended electric shock during the course of care or treatment? if you're a staff member here, and that's per Michael's point, you know, there's so many things that plug in. You may be operating something not directly involved in care, but still preparing to care for someone, or just as a part of your work. Does that limit us unnecessarily? It's really during the course of care for the patient, and then for the employee, it's for their work. It's not necessarily directly in the moment caring for someone. I don't know if I'm parsing it out inappropriately.
Well, you're juggling two things. One is the electrician downstairs that's working on a, you know, a filing cabinet and shocks himself with his drill, and a nurse who's working on an EKG machine and plugs it in while standing in water. I don't know if I have a big vote here. You know, if the electrician downstairs, they're the most likely to be shocked, you know, actually. If they got shocked while they're repairing the refrigerator in the kitchen, do we want to include that as a serious reportable, you know, sort of patient safety event, kind of? Or do we want to limit it to in the course of caring, in the course of patient care?
The latter.
Yeah, I agree. This is Stan. So the first event that you talked about would be reported to our Department of Public Health as a, you know, sort of like fires and other structural issues.
Okay, so then we could write an exclusion, you know, for staff members that were performing duties not involving patient care.
Right.
That makes it cleaner.
Well, and back to the original question, I would kind of assume it, from my personal point of view, that the care would include the preparation for care that's necessary on the staff level.
That's sort of what I was getting at. Like, you know, the EKG example,
right.
You can not be in a room, you can be dealing with the EKG machine, not providing care, but getting that machine ready for care.
Right.
And that's what I was trying to get into, the process of your work, if you will. But that might be too unnecessary to get to that detail.
But then it could be almost included as a healthcare provider rather than the electrician downstairs. You know, whether it's a nurse or whatever that was doing it.
Getting closer.
Well, then let's see. Associated with a patient care process.
Yeah.
Damn, he's good.
Yes.
I like.
So after associated with electric shock, associated with the healthcare process, is that the way we would amend this?
Let's see. All right, let me try it.
What's
patient
your
death or serious injury?
Injury.
Wait a minute. Death of a patient, death or serious injury of a patient or staff member associated with electric shock in the course of a patient care process.
Yeah, I like it. That's great.
Well, being cared for in a healthcare facility.
Right, that would be there.
Setting.
Oh, setting, okay.
Are people good with that as amended?
Yes.
Yes.
And I just have one question about the clause below that excludes events involving planned treatments such as electric countershock or electric cardioversion. I assume we're keeping that. We've had some questions about treatments like ECT, and I assume that the event is not designed to capture that, although I'm not entirely sure why. I'm wondering if we need to provide any other clarification on what's reportable and what's not here, and types of treatments that may be excluded.
And we just talked about it during cardioversion or something like that. If the staff person is shocked, that's not the plan. So do we, you know, instead of excluding those, would we want to sort of say associated with an unplanned electric shock, because then you kind of, any of the planned shocks around ECT or cardioversion would be excluded, but if it's something unplanned happens, it would be included?
I like that too.
Well, I would kind of go in a different direction. ECT, no one should die of ECT. It, you know, it deaths in ECT are so rare that you'll never see one in 7 years. They're like abductions.
Yeah, no, and we have never seen one, but there, we have seen injury.
Yeah, okay. It seems to me that the exclusion here is not intended to avoid that, but to avoid a person who comes in a VTAC, a lethal rhythm, and then you shock them and they die, you know, anyway. Or they're in AFib and you try to cardiovert them and you put them into VFib and they die, which is a known complication of the procedure. I think that the sense that I have is that this isn't when the electricity is part of the procedure and death or injury is a known complication of an intended procedure where electricity is the therapeutic modality.
Therapy, yeah.
Right, but maybe there's a way we need to clarify that.
Differently, I agree.
We've had cases where there was an injury to a patient while they were receiving ECT, although the injury was not necessarily related to the use of electricity during that procedure. It was during the course of the procedure, but it might have been more related to the restraints that were used or other aspects of it and not the shock itself, which is sort of a different issue. But I wonder if we need to provide a bit more clarification on what the intent is here.
Okay, so maybe it would help then if I hear what you're saying. The death or serious injury is associated with an electrical injury, not associated with, well, crap, no, that doesn't.
Would that be a burn?
Doesn't change anything. It helps me with the person that sprains their back because of inadequate anesthesia during ECT,
right?
Which, again, is extremely rare. But we're really looking here for an electrical injury.
Well, yeah, I guess that's what I'm wondering is, are we looking just for an electrical injury, and is that sufficiently clear with the definition as it's worded now?
Well, it certainly says electric shock. So that to me makes it pretty clear that we're talking about an electrical injury, not a peripheral injury. Or
I think it's a synonym for me.
Okay. All right, works for me. We may just need to do a little more clarification here.
So maybe the exclusion could be tinkered with. If we leave it patients and staff, like we said above, and then we go down to the exclusion and we say excludes complications of treatments that involve deliberate electrical therapy, such as countershock and cardioversion. Yeah, I'm trying to split the line between complications again, you know?
Yeah. Maybe this is another one where we just, aside from the change that we've already agreed on, maybe we just leave it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Are people comfortable with that? The original amendment modification we talked about, which includes staff and the other...
Yeah, this is Gaucheel. I agree.
Okay.
Me too.
Okay. Sounds good.
We're great at overthinking these things.
Yes, but that I'm confident that you guys will catch any outlier if you do that, so that's good.
Yeah.
Okay, that moves us on to B. Any incident in which a line designated for oxygen or other gas to be delivered to a patient contains the wrong gas or is contaminated by toxic substances, what did the TAPS think?
We thought it was relevant in the ambulatory surgery TAP, but most anesthesia machines today make it impossible for you to connect any gas other than oxygen to the machine. That doesn't say necessarily that if some outside source of oxygen or other gas was misconnected and you were using, say, nasal cannula or something like that, and you got a toxic gas because the outside source was wrong, but at least on the inside, it's relevant, but I think it's, you know, it's probably not something that happens very often.
From the physician office, we thought it was relevant. One issue we thought about was, you know, if gas got shut off or something without the provider being aware, but that sort of got to the bigger issue of this is about containing the wrong gas or contaminated gas. And one issue that we all felt comes up in ambulatory a lot is lack of delivery of gas, particularly with oxygen canisters, et cetera. And so we thought maybe it could be expanded to include that piece because that, at least in the ambulatory setting and so on, that can often be an issue. Not often, sometimes, hopefully rarely be an issue.
Yeah, the one we see in ambulatory is the tank gets empty.
Right. Or they get discharged from the hospital with a tank and it turns out to be an empty tank or, you know, all sorts of things. All sorts of stories were coming up when we had this discussion.
You know, it would almost be delivered to a patient that contains no gas, the wrong gas, or is contaminated by toxic substances.
I'd vote for that.
Can we amend that way, since that the no gas seems to be the most prevalent, if that's what you guys are saying?
I think it is.
Okay, let me I agree with this, and I just am going to raise something to shoot it down. This is an instance of wrong drug, wrong dose, wrong patient, wrong time, wrong something. Strictly, if you even consider oxygen a drug, you know, halothane certainly a drug. This is one of these things where I think we could, in another world, subsume it under the wrong drug, wrong patient, wrong something. But because gases are special, I would leave it here.
I agree. Kind of similar to our IVF issue before.
So the recommendation is to leave the wording as is or include the...
Can we include the no gas?
No gas.
Mm-hmm. To a patient containing no gas, the wrong gas, or contaminated toxic substance?
Agree.
Yep, I agree.
We have consensus on that one. Anybody disagree with that, with leaving as is with the inclusion of no gas?
It's Melinda. The SIP group has suggested... Mm-hmm. Substituting systems for line in order to be clear that it captured tanks. So do you think line captures everything that should be properly?
So their suggestion would be any incident in which systems designated for oxygen or other gas?
Yes.
Yes.
Does that work for everybody?
Good.
Yes, that sounds great.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, I think we've got agreement on that one with a couple of changes. We move to burn to C. Patient death or serious disability associated with a burn incurred from any source while being cared for in a health care facility.
Well, the ambulatory surgery tab, we certainly agree that it should stay in. This is
the physician office one.
Burn while your plastic surgeon is doing your bluff or something.
And again, we're changing disability to injury and facility to setting.
Yes.
Right. I think we agreed that across the board, right? So.
And we're leaving out the staff here.
Should we be including staff here?
Why would we exclude them?
Seems like we should include them if we've included them in the shock one.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the same. See if we can translate that same language to thermal injury besides electrical injury. It seems perfectly parallel to me.
Yep.
Okay, so do we have consensus for leaving this in while including staff and making our agreed-upon changes to injury and healthcare setting?
Sounds good to me.
Me too.
Bye.
Yep. Okay. Wow, believe it or not, we're on the very last event, I think, yeah, that we're dealing with. Jumping down to E, patient death or serious disability associated with the use of restraints or bed rails while being cared for in a health care facility.
This is a Joint Commission issue as well, isn't it? It's one of the standards, safety standards. So I think it applies certainly to the TAP, but it should be really pretty infrequent now. But the issue for our TAP was about chemical restraints. And that might be true for Eric, too. I'm not sure what their nursing facility discussed.
In an ambulatory, we struggled with this a bit just because we didn't think restraints were really used very often in our setting. But obviously, if they were, it would matter if there was a death or serious disability. So I think we actually kind of punted on this one. We couldn't come to consensus.
This is Michael. I would add the word physical restraints because I don't want to go there with the chemical ones.
Yeah, I think that's a good modification.
And why would you not go there with chemical, just for my edification, since we do
know
that it's used?
Because we already have a pretty good one, not perfect, about drug dose appropriateness, indication, contraindication, you know, and so on. And the very blurry dividing line comes when we are talking about sedation versus therapy, you know, versus analgesia versus restraint. And I think you get into an enormously muddy pharmacy question if you allow drugs. You know, when is an Ambien at night a physical restraint? When's the little Haldol a restraint, you know, like I say it is, you say it's not?
Could those medication-related ones be part of the adverse drug event, one that we talked about a few calls ago?
I believe they're all under there,
yeah.
Although not maybe completely subsumed.
Yeah.
The bad ones we want are mostly subsumed.
Does everyone agree that previous event that we discussed would capture chemical restraint and that it makes sense to clarify with physical restraint in this event?
I think it would be useful if we included this as an example under the drug issue.
Like it did with hypoglycemia.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But everybody's okay with adding the word physical to clarify here, physical restraint? Or is it, do you think it's not necessary?
I think it's necessary.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
That's for the clarity.
Okay. That's what we'll do. Any further discussion on that one? Sounds like we're in agreement. Okay. Congratulations, you got through the whole list. Good work. And I think, I don't know, Peter, or is there anyone for public comment on the line at all?
Well, we can ask the operator to check, and then we'll do the public comment phase, and then I would suggest we sort of talk about some next steps.
Yep.
It's unlikely we can clear the rest of the work in the remaining 5 minutes or so. So, or we could do it fast, but operator, if you could just check for us to see if there's anyone on the listening line.
No listening line.
Okay. So, Sally, go ahead with...
Okay. So, I guess we should do one more call to wrap up what...
one of the questions I have is the definition. Did we ever, we've talked around this on every call, the definition of serious disability versus injury, and I had some thoughts that related to a study we did in the ICU with medication errors, and we found out we had to define a new term called a drug-related hazardous condition. It would be like a serum potassium of 2 with no arrhythmias or permanent harm, but it clearly was undesirable. And I'm kind of interested in that since it's sort of the trigger for the reports to begin with. And I don't think we really have reached agreement on that, even though we have the nice document from the Minnesota Hospital Association.
I'd call that one a near miss, and I think this whole subject needs a little bit more discussion. I'd be open to another call where part of the agenda was talking about what we really mean by injury now, you know, because somebody's going to ask.
I agree.
And we still have now the leftover agenda of the things that Cynthia and I worked on, which were the informational the new submissions about information
right.
gaps and misfollowed up.
Yeah, there's what you just described, Mike. There is this serious disability, and then there's just to make sure we're all comfortable with definition for end of surgery as well, though we did talk about that a couple of calls ago. I'm going to ask Melinda to perhaps give her perspective. She's going to be doing the heavy lifting on the report writing. And from your vantage, Melinda, what do you think would be the optimal use of the committee's time as well as advancing our report writing to get feedback as well?
Well, I was thinking about the issue of how soon another call could occur and what the expectation is about going forward. So I had a question about whether or not those people who are working on various pieces to finish up could provide those back electronically with copies to everyone. We could pull them off and incorporate them into a glossary of terms, and we've talked about definition of lots of terms, so I think glossary may be the best way to go. Incorporate them into a glossary, incorporate all the recommendations and changes of the groups as you've met on calls and as you feed information back electronically into a table that identifies where the changes are from the 2006 version to the version that will be going forward, and have the steering committee look at those two documents. So if people think that's workable and could agree that within, say, a week, we could get those other pieces in, then we could commit to turn a glossary and an amended table around to the entire group quickly thereafter.
I think that actually is an efficient use of both our time as well as the committee's time, and it's a little bit different than what we described at the beginning of this call in terms of relying heavily on a SurveyMonkey. But by taking that approach, I would recommend that we move forward with that step if, Sally, you're okay with that as the chair.
Yeah, I would be, but just for clarification in our own thinking in terms of calendars. So we're talking about the folks who have been working in subgroups getting that info and recommendations in, Melinda and other staff circulating a glossary and other stuff for our review, but when potentially might be another call? Are we talking about into October, or you think within September that we is that what you would envision, trying to schedule one?
Well, it would be nice to sneak one in before the end of the month, but
that may be tough. I don't know.
Yeah. We may need to sneak into the first week mm-hmm. of October, but we'll solicit and see what we can come up with. We certainly, you know, we've got momentum. We've got everybody with fresh thought. If we let it go too far in terms of number of missed weeks, then things get a little dull in people's memories. So. We'll work with you all and do the solicitation process and go as soon as we can.
Perfect.
Sounds good.
Great.
All righty.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks.
Everybody, great work today. Thanks so much. This has been just a pleasure of a group to work with, and we look forward to wrapping this up with you in the next few weeks. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you all.
Everybody. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.